thank you to all of you for being such good sports and for giving such provocative presentations. And for some of the laughs, that felt good at the end of the day, sort of gets our minds shaking. So we thought, in the interest of time, that we would turn the questions right over to the audience. So if there are people who have questions, we could invite you to come down to the microphone now. Have we talked you all out?
Talk them out.
I actually don't have a question, but I would like to do PR for a friend. And it's in relation to Helen's talk. And I really enjoyed what you had to say about an art family tree and how oftentimes young male artists are fit into a canon of art history where they're given fathers by their critics. And this is for a show that a friend is participating in, organized by a very dear ex-professor of mine. It's going to be at the Campbell Soddy Gallery at the LGBT Center on 17th, and the show is called Art Daughters, where this professor has paired up younger women with older women artists and an exhibition of their work side by side. And my friend's name is Jen May, and she's been paired with Joanna Fateman, who isn't too much older than us, but a generation maybe before us.
Okay, thank you so much. No, I'm sorry, was that rude and abrupt? Didn't mean to be. Yes.
I have a question for Wenge Chimutu, actually. I'm writing my master's thesis on you and your art, and I was just wondering. I have a lot of questions for you, but just one. So I was just interested in what you chose to talk about for your presentation today, and just how you feel for being chosen by MoMA to talk at this symposium, and that they have one of your works in their collection. I just saw it yesterday, actually, on display. Just how you feel being the one, and you made a list of all these other great scholars and artists, and just why do you think you were chosen?
Because I live in New York. It's actually interesting that you're asking that. I sort of feel the way I do about some of these ideas, that there's a notion of complicity as well as radicality at the same time, and I'm sort of engaging in, I think, ideas that are interesting and to me are sort of edgy, but at the same time there is a certain level in which right now, due to the market and due to whatever reasons, and perhaps because the work is interesting in some cases, it's being co-opted by the institution, and so is this symposium and many things that we consider to be very interesting and should be ephemeral and mutating and changing and everything. So, I'm actually, I'm proud to be in the collection here, but I think the institution needs to grow and change with the demographic, with all the issues that are presently around, and I think it's taking its time, but, if my work being here is any indication of a slight change, then perhaps it's happening. So, yeah.
I'm Sarah Lewis, and thank you so much for all of your remarks and the panel yesterday as well. I had a question that is directed specifically more at Wangeshi initially, but it really does engage with all of your comments regarding movement, in fact. I noticed that Ingrid's comments regarding movement and Wangeshi's more specifically regarding dance images that have inspired your own work. I mean, specifically Shia Gungan again related to Josephine Baker and Bert Williams and others. Is an interesting sort of clarion call for those who aren't artists also to consider how their own bodies operate in space and how the assumptions that are placed on their bodies can, for critics, curators, art historians alike, be a mode of actually creating something new and questioning them. I was sort of struck by the answers to questions previously regarding the dominance of white women in art historical academies, and I wonder whether or not the answer doesn't also lie in not only bringing in a more diverse set of scholars and historians, but also questioning what it means that the assumption is made that white women art historians don't necessarily consider, you know, Wang Geshe's work or work of other artists of color as important in their syllabuses. I think that's an essentialist sort of remark that I think we should consider. But I wonder, with regard to Helen and Ingrid and Anne, how we consider our bodies in institutional space and how that affects what we do both in our practice and our writing and in curating.
I mean, I do you want to go?
No, I try not to think about my body in space. You take it.
We weren't asking about your body in space, but anyway, that's great. I think femaleness, femininity, blackness, all of these labels are performance oriented. I think there's a level to which you are who you are, and then you are these things that society places upon you. And so I think there is a lot of performativeness about things that seem very authentic and real and what's going on here. There's a lot of give and take. There's determining who your viewer, your audience is going to be when you walk out the door, and how to dress in order to get from A to B, and not be assaulted or be hired or whatever those, So I think about those things. I mean, unfortunately, I shouldn't have let them bully me off the podium, but I had a video I wanted to show that you've probably seen, which is Cutting, which is the performance of sort of hacking away at this, object body in a landscape, and that takes this sort of glamorized, super stylized image of these performers to something more that happens in the rural areas amongst women who are working and who have to contend with the real physicality of being alive and putting food on a table or fighting or whatever it is that keeps humans moving. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I see those conditions of being who we are as very performative to a certain degree.
If you take it away from sort of movement into performance, I can say I think performing the role of daughter is something that has become increasingly an odd performance in a way for me, because it's hard to perform the role of daughter to older women's work that you weren't even aware of. And so there's this meeting then, that happens. And that's why I think I found models of sister and cousin a kind of interesting way to think about how to navigate so much erasure and repression. To not have a kind of, not to perform a sanctimonious relationship to the mother, which is not one, but rather to try and figure out what different models of intergenerational affiliation and association can be, and how we can perform those roles.
For me, your question is a huge question. Mm-hmm. And my simplest way, I think I could answer you that I've tried to write my way through those questions. For example, at a certain moment, when the whole kind of brouhaha about Mapplethorpe's S&M pictures, which have everything to do with your question, my way of navigating my way through that question and also sort of, that aspect of things that I deal with was really to write my way through it. And in the same way, it's a reason why I've tried to write about fashion, which is such a loaded subject. But at a certain point, I think when I realized that the last time I wore a skirt was in 1979, when I actually threw it in the Hudson River. And not only did I throw it in the river, I was so scared it was going to come back up that I wrapped it around a boulder so it stayed down there. I realized that I really do have issues with fashion, and have ended up writing quite a lot about it. So my way is always that way, which is to write my way through things. as you can tell, I haven't gotten very far, but.
That was a hard question, I know, so thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi, I wanted to return to a topic from this morning, which is the perception that there is a backlash against feminism in the younger generation, that demographic group of late 20s, early 30s, and the question of how one might productively engage women, young women today, and find some common cause of unity in this country. I'm thinking there was an article in the New York Times a couple years ago that talked about the phenomenon of young women from Ivy League colleges who took very high-profile, high-paying, demanding jobs immediately after graduation, only to quit them in their early 30s to raise their families. I'm thinking of an article in the Yale Alumni Magazine from last year that was on the topic of young professors and motherhood, and the struggles explored through personal interviews with professors that they encountered on a daily basis, and the kind of pressures they were under in the current system. I also am thinking about the comment that the numbers of women in art history faculties is increasing, which is, of course, a wonderful thing. But I wonder if we might stop and think about the retention rates of those women and the studies that have been conducted by MIT and other institutions that look at what happens when a professional woman has children and the effect that has in her career, and the fact that those women are not staying in the academy. And I want to simply put these questions out there. It seems to me that the one huge question that the first wave of feminism has not answered is how one can be ambitious and professional and also raise a family. And I think the current generation is experiencing some of the difficulties in trying to realize those early aims put forward in the 1970s. And I'd like us to think a little bit more about those today. Thanks.
I mean, it seems to me that the fundamental thing you're putting on the table is childcare, right? Which would enable, you know, the women to live productive lives that are ambitious professionally and that are ambitious with regards to raising a family. And I don't have a whole lot of answers to those kind of questions, but I would like to come back to something about what you said about comments about a younger generation being resistant to the idea of feminism. Because one of the things that's really struck me at this, over the 2 days preceding, is how many younger women are here, how many younger women have been brave enough to come up and ask young women questions, and how interesting it has been to hear them struggle with the idea of feminism as a kind of historical and bounded activity. And I have to say I've come to see them as potentially being right, and that it may not just be a matter of, it is a matter of semantics, that if addressed as a homosexual, I kind of don't reply, I don't respond. But if addressed as queer or gay, I do. And I think that is about nomenclature, that is about identification with struggles and identities, and it is about historical periods. And it is about trying to figure out new models for oneself. And so I do think that, for instance, issues of childcare are a predominant daily conversation among women my age who are professional women, and which is different sometimes or somehow than maybe thinking of yourself in your 20s as a feminist. I mean, that's not really an answer to your question, but it's only to register a kind of openness to seeing feminism as so defined, as a historical problem, struggle, movement, and that some of the things we need to talk about now are different than some of the things we had to talk about 30 years ago. Childcare is not one of them,
I completely agree with that. I would just expand it beyond childcare. I think that's, again, adopting a model that the women are responsible for the kids, and as soon as they give the kids to someone else, everything's hunky-dory. It's a little more complicated than that.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying that. But I am saying that, I mean, yes, you're right.
I just wanted, you know, as something quick to say, is really throw a spotlight on this assumption that, I mean, I have heard it said that there's a backlash, but I really wonder if that's true.
Right.
My experience, you know, I'm not a teacher, I'm not in colleges, but my experience is that it's the opposite, which is for the first time in about 20 years, 25 years, myself included, I think there's an enormous hunger to talk about these issues, to argue about them, to think about them, to rethink about them. And I think that there's a real reason, you know, that we're watching at the same time as in the mainstream media, all we're reading about is art and money and power. I think where you're really feeling the kind of collective hunger of the zeitgeist is in these questions of feminism. And I think that there's enormous anticipation for the WAC show, not just to see Dispense pictures, and also in the Global Feminism show, and there was a little show at Jeffrey Deitch called Womanizer that was completely over the top with exploding Chanel suits and all that stuff, and you know that was mobbed. And I wonder if it's really true that there's a backlash.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's great. So,
who's spreading the rumor?
Right.
We should take more questions.
Yes, we should.
Minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you all for an amazing panel, an amazing 2 days, really. I have a question for Wangechi, who, I have some specific questions that maybe speak to some larger issues within representation and feminism. And this talk about mothers and daughters today, I can't help but think of Hannah Hawke when looking at your work and the aesthetic correlations there, and I'm thinking about her use of imagery and aestheticizing politics and your subsequent practice of aestheticizing the politics from Nairobi, and I'm wondering how your works are received in Africa, if they are at all, and whether the presence and recent prevalence of your work in America is somehow speaking to, I don't want to say a tokenism, but I think it might have been Martha Rosser who speaks of the act of looking at images as a surrogate for action. And I don't know if you could speak to that idea, whether the MoMA's, you know, inclusion of you in their collection can function as a replacement for actually doing something about the issues that your work is really emerging from.
It's such a hard question because you're kind of asking me to sort of sit in someone else's head. I don't know exactly. I haven't been home in a number of years, and that's part of why I'm sort of fixated on the idea of exile and migration and so forth. So I don't know what people perceive of my work in Kenya, I would say. Africa's huge, so I don't know. I mean, I had a show of the video cutting in South Africa, and I think it did fairly well, but I don't know who was looking at it except for the art, you know, art savvy crowd there. And as pertains to, you know, the sort of the perception of the institution, is that what you're sort of asking me about, the sort of the MoMA and I mean, I'm not.
I guess I'm asking, like, why your work here now?
I don't know. That I can't answer that question.
It's actually really good. I mean, it's really good.
I can't answer that question. I have no, you know. I mean, there's mechanisms for it. The museums don't often buy work. They often have people buy work for them.
I didn't mean MoMA. I guess I meant in America. And this, I think we've had a tendency to aestheticize politics for years now. And I'm wondering if the same is happening with your work.
You know, I think these are great questions, but we have lines on both sides, and David has flashed the sign, so if it's okay, we'll move on to the other aisle. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Deborah Cass. I had something to do with the representation and value thing in 91 and also with WAC, and I've thought a lot about what's been going on the last 2 days, and I decided to really limit this comment to Helen. And I'm going to talk for a really underrepresented bunch of people at this conference, I think, that you addressed, which are the painters. And I am so grateful that you brought up the images you did, the history that you did, And I think that one thing that has gone consistently since the 70s under the radar is the influence of a generation of painters, Joan's generation, Elizabeth Murray, Pat Steer, Mary Heilman, Louise Fishman. And it's a comment for the curators and for the historians, I wish that that history of painting, women's influence over each other, with each other, women's dialogue with the master narrative of painting, their resistance to it, their implication, their complication within it, is really an important history that I wish there was more being done with. And that's my comment. But thank you for bringing it up. It was great to see some beautiful painting up there.
It was my pleasure.
All right, I think we're done, and on to Linda Nochlin. Thank you all.